It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 137 of Radio TCX, your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy. This week's episode is going to be a little bit different. We have a guest host on this week. Carson wasn't able to record, so instead we brought on Kevin Lines to come chat about 2nd Edition and the Coruscant Invitational. Kevin is a well-decorated X-Wing player. He made it to the final table at the 2016 World Championship and has had strong performances in many premier-level X-Wing tournaments all throughout 1st Edition, so it was a really great time to talk to him and get his perspective on the game. So I hope you guys enjoy this interview with Kevin Lines. All right, so I've got Kevin Lines on the phone. Kevin, thanks for coming on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me again, Tim.
It's good to have you back, too. We haven't had a chance to have you on the podcast yet to talk about 2nd Edition since it launched not too long ago. So let's just get right into it right away. I want to know right away, what are your, general impressions of the game so far? Now that you've played at the Coruscant Invitational, you've got a chance to get a bunch of games in with a bunch of high-level X-Wing players. Are you feeling good about 2nd Edition so far?
Yeah, I feel good about it in the point where I actually want to play the game again, and I'm really enjoying it. I didn't enjoy it for quite a while. So, now that it feels much cleaner, much fresher, feels like dials matter again, that's good. Yeah, it feels good.
It feels, yeah. So specifically when you're talking about it feels good, what is feeling different about 2nd Edition compared to 1st Edition?
So I think the biggest thing towards the end, the last, 18 months or so, it really came down to there was many times where you felt like no matter what you did positionally or with your dials and your ships, that it really didn't matter. And it came down to, can I pull off the best combo and push that onto my opponent? I think that's how it felt at the end. And that's what really was discouraging.
No, I think that comboing that we were seeing towards the end, especially with stuff like Nimiranda, which was just all over the place, it became a lot less about flying the ships and a lot more about just having that combo, knowing all these triggers. And I don't know, the game felt fundamentally different even from what it was a couple waves prior to that. I'm glad to see a lot of the changes here, though. I think the dials mattering is a huge part of it, too. I feel like when I play, I don't know if you're getting this, too, like the decisions I make, even just the little individual action decisions, carry more weight, because if I make a mistake, I feel like I'm penalized for it all the more. But when I make a good decision, it feels like I made a really great decision. Whereas at the end of 1st Edition, everything was so reactive at that point that it didn't really matter what planning I made. It was all about the reacting to whatever happens with the actions and the cards, right?
Yeah, and I think the... should I even say this? That the crates, I think they had it correct. Like, I was talking to some of them, and I think they're dead on that you feel like you're bad at the game again, which is good, because then it feels like a challenge, and then you're way more analytical on your decisions and what you could have done better. And I think that's what we want. You want to feel that struggle again, although it's painful. That struggle drives you, and it is also more rewarding then.
No, I absolutely agree. I feel like for me, who played a lot of games of X-Wing, transitioning into the new edition and having all these new ships and having to kind of relearn even the most basic mechanics there, because now things feel completely different. Taking a target lock is entirely different now. And even just simple things like that completely changes the way you play the game. Because I got into the habit, just like anyone else, of like checking for target locks just because I could. If it was out, okay, I can switch to another action. Now that I have to like actually decide, okay, am I going to be able to take a target lock? Like, am I eyeballing this right? Or is this barrel roll going to clear? The barrel rolling thing has gotten me, caught me off guard more times than I can count already.
Yeah, that is one of the big changes, which I think was good, but I think might have been a little bit too harsh, was the changes to aces. Because now aces became way more arc dodgy. Like, before it was, I'm going to limit the number of shots and just token stack and you can't kill me. Now it's literally like, I need to not get shot at, and that's fine. But yeah, the barrel roll thing took a bit of getting used to. especially when you're near rocks and you used to have the give. Now you're like, well, does it fit in one of those three positions? Because if it doesn't, I can't even try it.
Yeah, and I lose my action. And I think that was a big too. I love the Inquisitor back in first edition, and a lot, I think, of the skill of the Inquisitor was having that slight angle to start and then really being able to eyeball those barrel rolls, do those slight maneuver position changes so that you can catch people in arc and get out of their arc.
Yep.
Now that that's taken away, I do kind of miss it a little bit. There's so many cases here where I'm like, you know, we have to start that barrel roll from the center position. And I keep thinking like, man, if I could have just started from the back, I would have definitely arc dodged, right?
Yes.
But, you know, I was off by even just a little bit and I have no control there.
Yeah. And I think that's good. I mean, aces were probably too strong in first edition, but maybe that was other things that made it that way. But now arc dodging, in my opinion, and I agree with Duncan on this one because he talked about how aces just arc dodge better at range one than they do at range three now, which is true spatially. But
yeah, absolutely.
It also kind of feels bad because a lot of your aces before could double reposition and now only a few can. And you literally can't token stack with almost any ship except for a couple.
I mean, I'm at a point in this game where I've never been more terrified of a two attack dice shot at range three. Like, if I'm flying something with no shields and there's a crit in there, I'm like, well, I might take a crit this turn and it can chain into a bunch of damage.
Oh, yeah. I took a couple shots where, like, Howl Runner against Cody would roll one hit and I'd be at range three through rock and I'm just like, whatever. And I roll my four dice and you look down and they're all blank and you just go, what?
What? This is X-Wing now.
Where's my auto thrusters?
Right. I miss auto thrusters. Man,
so
I didn't realize.
Oh,
I depended on that so much. And now I got to get good again, though, right?
Yeah, it forces you to become a better player again. It does.
And I think that feeds into what I was saying, though. Like, the weight of your decisions, they matter so much more when you're playing. Like, oh, man, am I going to take the boost here? Am I going to take the focus? And it is a different way to play the game, not having the double repositioning, not having many ships that can get focus and evade in one turn. We've got a couple notable examples there. But the whole balance of the game has shifted. And I think we've seen that also in that the type of ships that are performing now, like in Extended, are often a lot of ships that were not doing well at all in first edition.
Yeah, now it's become a little bit more towards efficiency. And I was actually playing with Sean last night, and I tried to play a ship that can only... Like, I tried to play Nora, the Ark, and all she can do is barrel roll. And I just went, ugh, I hate this. Like, I've just realized, as a player... I need to have ships that have the ability to boost or barrel roll. They don't have to always be able to do both of them at the same time, but
they need to do either of them, right?
Yeah, because you can't range control. And that was the big issue that I had, is I've been trying to find that third piece for this list that I took to Coruscant, because I think it's the right direction to go. And if Extended is going to be what we're going to play for a while, and we don't really know what ships are going to be viable until at least January, so okay, play whatever. I need a third ship. I mean, Miranda wasn't bad, but she wasn't the ship that we were looking for. So I've been experimenting, and I might have ironically found the ship I didn't think I was going to ever play as my third ship. But yeah, I've come into that situation where if I can't play ships that can do double repositions or can barrel roll or boost, it bothers me to the point where I just don't like the list because I don't have that flexibility and I need that for my playstyle.
Mostly what I'm hearing from you is that you want old school Corrin back with push the limit engine upgrade, right?
I'm working on that, by the way. Don't be surprised if in January all the E-Wings get a cost reduction. I may or may not have confirmed that.
You're just lobbying to FFG to get that changed?
I may have cornered a couple developers while I was at Coruscant. Yep.
Well, I mean, I think I'd appreciate that. I'm not sure. I don't know.
I would like to be able to put them on the table.
Okay. Yeah, that would be nice. Let's talk a little bit about Coruscant, though. The Coruscant Invitational was held, I think it was the weekend before last, right? I wasn't able to make it out, and also I didn't qualify, so I had no reason to really be there, right? I'm a scrub. But you did qualify. You did qualify. So I want to talk a little bit about this event, because this is kind of the first real premier tournament that we're seeing for second edition. And it was interesting, right? Because you have a pretty high concentration of skilled X-Wing players. Everyone at this event had to be invited. They had to qualify. And you've got an entirely new edition and no other major events prior to this to really establish any semblance of a metagame. This was kind of the first event to really start to shape the metagame, at least for Extended. What was the thought process trying to decide a list going into this event? What information were you working off of? What were your general thoughts?
So, okay, so we break that down. From a tournament structure, I think it was interesting. I mean, most of the players that got there were skilled players or better players. I mean, there were some Nim Miranda players that qualified and some Fen Ghost players that qualified, so I wouldn't put them in that category. But yes, it did feel good that you go into it knowing almost every person you're going to play is going to be a real challenge. Whereas in like a big tournament like Worlds, where anybody can sign up previously, you could look at the first two rounds as probably buys or a good chance to win versus like, okay, I'm actually going to have to really taper down and really plan that this is going to be a tough fight. So that was kind of cool. It was also, I think their test, and I think we've seen it now, of what Worlds will be. This was their kind of precursor of here's how we're going to do qualifications for Worlds, kind of. And I think that was really an experiment from organized play, and I think it worked out good. So that was good.
It is interesting that both the highest level premier events for X-Wing now, the Coruscant Invitational and the World Championship, are both going to be events you have to qualify for. I was expecting, for the longest time, since we knew about the Coruscant Invitational, that would be the invite only, and then Worlds would still be available to everyone, but now we know that's not the case. But I want to know more specifically about deciding on your list. First of all, let us know what list you took, and how did you get to there? What were you expecting to see being flown out there? We already had some idea of what the most efficient ships were, but what was your thought process trying to assemble a list for this event?
Yeah, so we knew bombers were going to be there. Like, I knew Imperials were going to be in Mega Force. I knew Phantoms were going to be everywhere, which they were. So my thought was, I'm not really inspired by any of the Imperial lists. Like, I just
still a diehard Rebel player.
I really am, and I really want Resistance to come out because I hope that's going to be a good faction. Scum, I didn't want to play the bidding game because I knew that if I didn't have like a 15 point plus bid, which there was, I think like a 19 point bid was the highest bid maybe. But there was, everyone was bidding like 11 to 18. It was disgusting, but I didn't want to play that game. I just didn't want to. So that ruled out Scum pretty quickly for me. And I played a couple games of Scum and I was like, okay, the Fangs feel good. And then it was that third ship I wasn't quite settled on. And then I played Luke, and I went, oh, there's new Corrin. Yep, here's Luke. So Luke's really good.
He is really good.
He's arguably the best ship in the game, I think.
I mean, that pilot ability alone is just incredible. Like, for the fact that ships can't double stack defensive tokens, Luke just being able to access a force charge every time he gets shot at, it just means the whole world, right?
Yeah, it does. And him with torpedoes, like, I feel like torpedoes are an auto include on Luke, and so is supernatural reflexes. Mm-hmm. His flexibility and his punching power is insane. Mm-hmm. And it just feels really good. It feels as close to Corrin as I can get. So he was the first staple. And then everyone was like, oh, Sabine's really good. Sabine's really good. All right, I'll try her out. I played two games with Sabine and went, wow, that ship is awesome. Mm-hmm. So my Luke loadout was R2-D2, Supernatural Reflexes, S-Foils, and Proton Torpedoes. And I think that's probably my standard. Unless I don't need R2-D2, I could drop to R2 Astromech. That's probably the standard Luke that you will see, period. And then I ran Sabine, the attack shuttle, which I was super impressed with. We ran her with Trick Shot and Cassian Andor, the crew. And that's a little known card that people didn't see very much in first edition. It's basically an intel agent where you can change your dial if you guess their move correctly. That was
fun.
It
also lets you look at their maneuver. Yeah.
Yeah. You basically guess their maneuver, look at it. And if you guess it right, you can change your dial if you want to. And the idea was, okay, fine. Vader's moving after me. I am going to take a ship that can literally block anything of any ace who moves after me so I can protect Luke. And we also found that Sabine with just Trick Shot rolling out there was disgusting. Her offense is so good, and she can token stack really effectively. The only thing we did find that Cassian, if you bump, you can't use it at range zero. So we realized that although we were guessing people's moves a lot, we didn't really need Cassian. So it was a nice to have, not need. And when I say we, Nathan and I ran the same list. Nathan Idy.
Okay, I was about to ask. I didn't know if this was like a M. Night Shyamalan split scenario. So
yeah, no, like I think Nathan and I are going to be running a lot of the same lists for a while now that we've started to talk. We made a discussion after Worlds, and we were like, okay, we need to actually team up now and take over the Midwest. So that's the plan.
Well, and I think I've already made my time travel theory about you two guys pretty clear, right? You're him from
that's
the
right,
future.
Past and future, yeah. So we have the ultimate version.
You've come back to mentor yourself so you can finally win a world championship.
That's the plan, right? Bring it home. And I mean, we have to stop Europe from winning this year. That should be a goal for everyone in the right. US.
Got to represent the country, right?
Right.
All right. So you got the list together, right?
Then we had our last piece, Miranda. We played with a lot of different ships, and we found that Miranda was really, she's still really good, by the way. Anyone, I had so many people come up to me and I laughed in their face that were like, why are you playing Miranda? She's bad. She got nerfed. No, Miranda's still good. She's just different.
She's good for different reasons. Obviously, you now have that limit on her regen, so she can only regen if she's shieldless, right?
Yeah.
So at most, get one shield back on top. You can't revive yourself all the way back, which was kind of the problem, especially with TLT back in the game. What is good about her now? Obviously, you don't have Twin Laser Turret anymore. Are you still just rocking the straight ordnance load? Is it bombs? Is it slam? What's making her strong here?
So barrage rockets make her effectively a turret because you just aim the arcs to the side and you put the barrage out the front and you effectively have, you know, three quarters of your base
full
that you
coverage
can shoot
yeah.
out of, except for range one in the front or the back. So that's like the standard with her. We also had Leia on her because we needed someone to carry Leia. Boy, I will say this, I'm pretty sure they're going to lower the cost of Leia. But Leia is actually a super effective card. So keep an eye on her for cost adjustments and her viability. She's actually quite good. But we had Leia, and then I took Skilled Bombardier. Nathan wanted to bid the last two extra points, so he had a 5-point bid versus my 3-point bid. And then I had Proton Bombs. And I was expecting to see a bit more swarms than we saw, and I really didn't. So, like, going forward, I actually don't think bombs are really going to be needed or useful unless you have a trajectory simulator.
Yeah, especially after we've added now the system phase, right, prior to the activation phase. So you have to drop all those devices and bombs before you start moving. I think that's really changed the way it works. So even if someone's flying, like, a TIE swarm or something, they're still actually going to have, even at low initiative, a chance to react to that, which I think really affects their effectiveness. Trajectory Simulator obviously gets around that. If you're throwing them forward, you can control that a little bit better. I'm curious, you were expecting to see more swarms. What do you think was really holding swarms down?
Trajectory Simulator and probably Phantoms, as they did in Wave 4.
Okay.
I mean, those are the two big things. They cannot deal with Phantoms effectively, and they can't deal with a Proton Bomb in their face or Seismic Charges in their face all the time. I think those are the two big things that are going to really hold them away. And now when you remove the restriction of Boba Fett really just screws up swarms. If he can take a reinforce and like from a coordination and then boost into range one and take a focus at the start of combat, he can weather a lot of damage.
Yeah.
And then the swarm breaks apart. He probably has a bomb on board and he just destroys it. So I think those three pieces are really holding swarms apart. Ironically, turrets are not, because turrets really weren't present anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think those things.
And I don't think you can discount the effectiveness of proton torpedoes right now. Those are so good and they will pop any 3 or 4 hit point ship. Especially dropping crits in there with the proton, I wouldn't expect a TIE fighter to survive even maybe one of those with just a single token.
Yeah, no. Unless you've got Iden, they're going to pop TIEs pretty fast.
So you took that list to the event. You had a pretty decent run, right? You were batting 500.
Yeah, I went 3-3. Ironically, all the games that I forgot to use Leia when I was going to K-turn or Talon roll Luke, I realized I forgot to use Leia. I lost the game because Luke got stressed and in a spot I couldn't escape.
Right.
Yeah, the new triggers. Otherwise, yeah, I did good. I thought I played well. I mean, I only played, what, like 5 or 6 games in 6 months and still went 3-3.
That seems like a pretty, especially for that, the density of the quality of players there, right? You got pretty much all strong X-Wing players. I don't think going 3-3 is a bad way to end the day.
Yeah, and I think two of my losses were to guys that finished in the top 16.
Now, how did you feel about, we've got a little bit more of a live stream presence from Fantasy Flight for this one. They have live streamed Worlds before. It looked like they were putting out a pretty decent effort to make sure people could actually, who weren't attending the Invitational, get a feel for what was going on there. How did you feel about their social media presence and their live stream presence for this event?
I think Jimmy Lee has really stepped it up lately with his Twitter presence. He's done a really good job for organized play. I'm glad to see that they're taking things seriously now and feeling like they should start streaming most, if not all, events that they host, especially at the Game Center. So it was good to see that. That's the direction we need to go. And honestly, it's the direction the game needs. I mean, you're going to do nothing but advertise and get more players, and people want to see high level games. And why not do it when they're all there and you can technically do it for free?
Right. And I mean, obviously, they have the resources there to put on a really great live stream. We've depended on community resources for most of the live streaming. Obviously, Dion from Gold Squadron's done a fantastic job going to events, setting up the live stream there. I always love checking out those live streams. Those guys do a really good job. But it is nice also to see Fantasy Flight putting the effort out there to officially, you know, kind of represent the game and show it off, which, like, this is a game. If you want to advertise, you really need to show off like high level games, because that's where people are going to get really excited about it. They see those models on the table. They see how exciting the games can be. I don't know why they weren't just doing this the whole time. I think this would be a good time, though. Let's talk about tournament formats a little bit, because we chatting on Facebook and whatnot. You've been pretty adamant against viewing Extended as kind of the lead tournament format. Obviously, that's what we were running at Corazon Invitational. But you've been a pretty strong advocate thinking that the second edition format is probably going to be the lead one, right?
Yeah, I do. And I think we kind of got confirmation on that, a vague confirmation on that at Corazon. I do for a couple reasons. And really, they're from a balanced perspective. If you're introducing... Now, instead of three factions, if you're introducing technically four more factions and you only have a select small number of ships for those factions, it's really difficult to create a balance or an incentive for players to want to play all the factions. If, let's say, one faction has 15 ships and one faction has three or four, you have a lot less options and it's a lot less harder to incentivize it. But really, from a balance standpoint, when you break things apart like they did, you're able to easily change and modify points, and the best way to do that is trying to control the number of ships, getting a stable meta and saying, okay, this is accurate, this isn't, let's change these small knobs. Whereas if you've got all these ships, it creates so much data and noise that it's hard to accurately identify problems. I mean, you'll still hit the outliers, but the smaller changes, like, oh, the Y-Wing could maybe go down 2 points or this or that, it's much easier to see that when you have less ships. And I think just from a balance standpoint, that's the best way to do it. And I think you're going to probably see that as more of the major tournaments push or format that they favor for those reasons.
Yeah, and I think there's also obviously the accessibility issue too. Like, we have launch of second edition here. Yeah, new players aren't going to be able to go back and buy all the old content and then get conversion kits. I think that's a little cost prohibitive, especially since they're advertising this as a game where you can play just a single faction, which you really couldn't do in first edition. We did have Ryan Farmer from Minox Squadron did kind of get a little bit of a scoop. It looks like, got some vague details that there's going to be another format, it seemed like, where it's going to be a little more curated. What are your thoughts on the idea of having a lead tournament format that's more curated by the developers and the designers?
I think this could be a good way to help buy some time and bridge the gap for second edition's format to catch up a little bit, and to maybe make players become more creative in list building. So I think that's good. So, I mean, they announced that it's a hyperspace format. It's what they're going to use for most of their hyperspace events. That doesn't, I have to remember if that is the same thing regionals are now.
Yeah. So, yep, the hyperspace qualifiers are, yeah, there'd be the equivalent to regionals.
Okay, so this format will be interesting if they do it correctly. It could be really bad if they do it wrong. Hopefully they do it correctly. I'm guessing they probably will. But this should allow them to maybe select certain ships and push them away, but allow other ones to come in and help restrict the format, so maybe the new factions don't feel as outnumbered. I think that could be good. It'll depend. They just got to give us more information on what it'll look like. But I think it'll be a good way to transition from the second edition rules, which right now is only three ships, and that's kind of blech, to a more decent number of ships right away, and then later on, hopefully, we just jump into second and go with it.
Well, and it seems like the rate of release is going to be pretty quick based on, you know, the launch of second, which did have a decent amount of ships for a first wave launch, right? We had, I don't know, 8 or 9 ships there. And then yep. We're getting those Resistance and First Order conversion kits, I think, in November, right?
Yeah, it sounds like it. And I mean, maybe that's what was taking the boats so long to get across the ocean, was they were weighed down by all these other conversion kits for second edition, or they installed boosters. Who knows? But it is an aggressive timeline.
It is, yeah, and I would expect, I mean, it doesn't seem like they'd want to slow down at that point, too. So I think having a more curated format would be, like you're saying, a good stopgap between not having all of Extended there, which is hard to balance and not accessible for new players, and the very, so far, very limited second edition. Thinking long-term, though, how would you feel if we saw that more curated format where ships rotate in and out be one of the main tournament formats, like the hyperspace is all used, you know, 2-3 years down the road, use a curated format, and then their other events use the more open formats. Would you see that as a way you want to play the game?
To be honest, no. Because I think, well, so someone did ask a question about that too. So like they were like, well, so you're going to take like Luke and Vader away from me? And they made it sound like they're never going to take ships away, but they're going to control what ships enter it, which was interesting. But honestly, like, what, let's say we jump ahead 1.5 to 2 years, and each faction has like 10 ships probably or more.
Yeah. Seems like a decent
then
estimate.
I probably just want to be able to play with whatever the heck I want. But I guess if you did some more narrowing, that could be interesting. Maybe at that point it's good to spice it up. But if that's like the main thing, to me, that's less attractive, because I like having to sit down and say, all right, what are all the things for the different factions that I need to worry about and I need to think about?
I mean, the only thought I had right away when I heard about it was, I wonder if this is almost their version of a ban list, right? Where you don't have a card that's going to be long-term removed, but when a card's problematic, they'd pull it out of the format and then try to figure it out, right? Retool it to see, figure out how to reinsert it again later, rather than having like a generally, oh, this is too powerful, we're just going to permanently remove that from the game. That was my only thought about, because they've been in first edition, they never banned anything, and it seemed like their policy was not to remove any cards from the game like that. Whereas if they already have the excuse built into a curated format where they can say, well, we remove things from time to time, but then we'll add them back in later, if maybe that's a way they can get around a lack of a ban list.
Yeah, it could be. It'll be interesting to see what they just have to define more of what they mean, because they were pretty vague when they told us about the hyperspace format. But it could act as a ban list. If there is a problem, they could take it out right away and then say, all right, we're going to figure out what this thing needs to be adjusted to. And in the meantime, we'll just take it out of the pool. Or if one ship is played in like 75% of lists, maybe they take that ship out and say, okay, let's see a little bit of diversity while we try to figure out what to do with that one ship because it's everywhere. So yeah, it allows them more options.
That would probably be a good thing too, because that is a problem when we see ships being played in 75 to 80% of a faction's lists. Maybe it's a little too good for the game.
Right. That was the big thing too, I think, for second edition. Adjusting to the drop in the power curve was a little shocking at first.
Yeah. Well, when you get used to, you know, 4 heavily modified dice being kind of the standard, or 2 sets of twin laser turret volleys, suddenly going down to like 2 dice with a focus, 3 dice with evade juke, like it feels completely different, and you're spending a little more time hoping on that RNG, right?
Yep. Or when you lose auto thrusters and you can't token stack, you're like, oh, whoa, okay, I can actually take damage when I didn't ever care about it before.
So you've had some generally positive things to say, I feel like, about second edition. Are there anything about the way the game's shaping up so far that you'd like to see change in the future? A way rules are being interpreted, specific ships that you think need to be addressed?
Yeah, definitely. There's some ships that stand out like sore thumbs already. Like the Bomber, the Phantom, the Punisher, Trajectory Simulator. Those are the big, big ones. I think Palob is another one that stands out. I think Scum in general might be slightly undercosted. Because I think we've seen, just from the few tournaments that have happened already, you can see the trend just based on the math. Clearly, Rebels are the weakest in the results, followed by Scum, and then Empire is easily on top. I think there are some things. I think one of the big things at Coruscant, and part of why I went 3-3, was there's a lot of triggers. There's a lot of stuff going on. There was a couple times in my games where a guy had started moving his ships, and I had to stop him and be like, wait, you didn't even allow the system phase to happen for me to even try to drop a bomb or to use Cassian. Or, like, as activation starts, sometimes I would forget to use Leia because they would just start moving their ships. And it's like, oh, I didn't have time, and you've already moved your ship, so I missed the window. So I think one of the best pieces of advice I think I'm going to give myself is I've been putting my cards on the table. So, like, after I set my dials, I will put Cassian's card next to Sabine, or I will put Leia next to Miranda so that I don't forget those triggers, or if they have some kind of, like, a for each activation system, so like a system phase activation, engagement and stuff, some kind of like token or something that will remind the players to make sure that you do everything. That's honestly one of the best pieces of advice that I can give from my own experience, because it is a lot to take in, especially if you play extended, because there's so many new cards, there's so many ways cards work differently, and there's so many new triggers.
Well, it seemed like in first edition, the game kind of lent itself to a more casual approach to the round structure, where sometimes you wouldn't, you know, certain timings for abilities wouldn't even matter if neither player was using the cards. But now there are so many abilities that reference so many specific times, like when individual ships engage or the system phase. It almost seems like we need to kind of re-up X-Wing tournament etiquette and kind of be more procedural about it, right? Like go through the phases like, oh, planning now. Okay, system. Okay, activation. Okay. You know, maybe we need to be a little bit more specific about that just so that we're not rushing over these things. Because I've played a lot of players who are flying, you know, ships with bombs or TIE Phantoms, who they'll forget their own activations. I'll forget my activations. And then I'm early enough in the game. You know, these aren't high level events. So we backtrack a little bit so we can get those decloaks going or get the bombs dropped. But, you know, when we get to a high level event, people are going to be expected to remember their triggers. So that's going to be kind of a learning curve there with so many different abilities happening at so many different times.
Yeah. And that is one of the other reasons that I really talked about. I'm scared of extended because I know people want the freedom to use whatever they have in their collection, but it just makes it harder and harder. Cause let's be real. Like we're really relearning the game and we're relearning a lot of new mechanics that don't work the same. So when you have more cards and you have more options, you have more triggers, it just makes that harder and harder because there's so much noise. Whereas if you can condense it down and slowly grow it, especially to new players, it's going to make it easier. They're not as overwhelmed. And even as an experienced player, like I was a little overwhelmed when I was like, well, I have to do Cassian in this order. And then I drop a bomb and then I do Leia and then I do these things. And then he has his Phantom decloaks. And then it just becomes a huge stack, kind of like in Magic. Mm-hmm. And if you can slowly grow it, it's much easier than just dumping a bucket of water on someone and saying, here's all the triggers, go.
Well, people have a lot of different opinions about complexity in games, and typically the complexity of a game's not necessarily inherently good or bad, right? I almost feel like moving from first edition to second edition, where in first edition, a lot of the complexity as the game aged came from all those card combinations we saw, Nimranda lists, where you'd have a dozen different upgrade cards, and they all do really intricate, specific, different things. I feel like in second edition, in general, in most cases, the upgrade cards are a little less complex, but the base game itself is more complex. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's a good analysis of it. I think there's less complex cards, but there are more complex interactions within the game itself. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's a good way to describe it.
Okay, so let's close out our conversation here on a very positive note, right? What are you most looking forward to in X-Wing in the next several months or so? Is it conversion kits? Is it new ships coming out? What are you looking forward to, Kevin?
So I'm really looking forward to Resistance. They made it sound like Resistance is going to be Rebel Aces, like I like to play. So I'm really excited about that.
You're a dedicated ace player. You loved Corrin.
Yes. I'm really excited about that. I'm excited about the points change in January because we're going to get a rebalance set already in January, which will be good. And I think the other thing I'm really most excited about is the Jedi Starfighters. I really want to put Anakin and Obi-Wan on the table. I've always really thought Jedi Starfighters were basically A-wings on crack, which
they
was
are
awesome.
Sweet. Yeah. Oh man, those things are awesome.
I think I'm really excited about the clone troopers and like all the cool windows that we never got to think about that we can now maybe get excited about. I think that'll be fun. And honestly, just to see the seven factions, each faction in its own identity, I really want to see what those identities look like. I think that will be a really cool way to have the game.
Awesome, man. Yeah, that's all stuff that's really, really exciting in the future of X-Wing here. I think this is a good time to be an X-Wing fan and to get into X-Wing. There's just so much to look forward to in the future. We've got some growing pains here, but I think they'll get settled out in the next year or so.
Yeah, I think so.
So before we close out, though, again, thank you so much for coming on the show, Kevin. You did have an announcement you wanted to drop here?
Yeah, so one of the things that we're working on starting hopefully in the next month or so is Jake, Reem, and Walker Darkow and I are starting an Echo Base. The best way I can call it is we're going to commentate on games. Our plan is that we're going to record games, stream the commentary that we're going to do live on Twitch, and then we'll put them on YouTube. And we were kind of inspired by the Outer Rim smugglers that used to make YouTube videos. I don't know if you know about this, Tim. It was like
I think it's
years
back
ago.
In the day. Yeah.
Yeah, they used to do Vassal games, and then Trinity Squad games out of California did it for like 18 months and then stopped. But we thought there's a lot of streams, which is what people want, and there's a lot of podcasts, which there's just too many. So we didn't want to do another one of those.
Sure.
And I remember like when I first started to play the game, I watched Team Covenant's videos of Paul Heaver and Dallas, and that's where I learned the most.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
I think that is one area that as a community we could grow more in. So we got the idea to say, you know what, let's just start. I mean, we go to a lot of these major events, so let's record some games there and let's just start doing commentary and see where it goes. And I think that'll be fun because I really enjoy doing commentary and I think people want to see more games. So that's something that should be coming out really soon.
Awesome. That sounds fantastic. Yeah, I think there's definitely a market for that, too. I always liked watching those games early on when I was getting into X-Wing. Seeing some really high-level games there helped me learn a lot about the game. So I think this is going to be fantastic. Have you guys figured out a name or anything, what you're going to call this, or is that all to be decided?
I think we're still calling it Echo Base because the squadron or whatever that they divided the southern Minnesota area into that we created was called Echo Base, and I think
right
for now that's just what we're going to stick with because it's Jake's got a good logo set up and everyone is in the Facebook group, so it's all there. So I think we'll just call it, I think, like Echo Base, and then we'll see if we come up with a tagline or something, but no, I think that's what we'll call it.
Awesome. Well, that sounds fantastic. I'm honored that you chose to announce it here on the podcast. You know, very special. Definitely keep us up to date with that information so we can spread that out to our podcast listeners.
Sounds good.
All right, Kevin, thank you so much for coming on the show. We'll have to have you on again soon.
All right. Thanks, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Again, a huge shout out to Kevin for coming on the show and filling in as guest host this week. I really appreciated that, and I really did enjoy that conversation. We'll hopefully have him back on the show again soon. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. Just got a little bit of Patreon news here. We are working on kind of updating the Patreon for the new edition of X-Wing. We're already working on new rewards, so stay tuned for that. I'm hoping to get more information up about that, hopefully this weekend. But please be patient for that. Doing the podcast is pretty time-consuming on its own, but we're going to try and get that Patreon information updated. If you guys want to support the show, please go on to facebook.com/RadioTCX and like our Facebook page. You can also follow us on Twitter at RadioTCX Podcast. And if you really do enjoy the show, it really helps us if you go onto iTunes and leave us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the podcast and why prospective X-Wing players would be interested in listening. Those reviews are really important, and if you go that extra mile and add that written review portion, we really do appreciate that. If you do want to support the show directly, you can do that going to patreon.com/RadioTCX and becoming a supporter for us on Patreon. It's really our Patreon supporters that enable us to produce and make this show week to week, and we really appreciate everyone who's gone on there and supported us. Again, guys, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Carson should be back on next week, so we'll be back to your regularly scheduled Radio TCX. Until then, have a great week, and we'll talk to you next time.